live and local. This is Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game and live online at 1037thegame.com.
Welcome to Bumper Sports. Jarrett Roser here with Clint Domingue on this Friday afternoon, broadcasting live from the First South Farm Credit Studios in Karen Crow. You can tune into the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We're going to be here for the next 2.5 hours, have some great guests lined up to talk about everything going on. Going to be a lot of LSU baseball talk as the Tigers open up their Super Regional Series Saturday evening in Knoxville against the Tennessee Volunteers. You heard Jordy and company talking some about that, the tail end of that show, and we have our first couple guests set to talk about that series. Former LSU star Blake Dean, now the UNO Privateers baseball coach, going to be joining us in just a few minutes. And then Reggie Chapman from WBRZ, who is up in Knoxville, fresh off of a short practice with Coach Paul Maneri and company, announcing the pitching rotation for the weekend and all those things. So Reggie's going to give us a little bit of the feel of how things are looking up in Knoxville. And then that second hour, we'll have Fitzgerald West Jr., the star from Lafayette Christian, having a huge week on the recruiting trail. Tyler Batiste from The Athletic to talk some NBA playoffs. And then a special guest, Trey Touchette, former STM star, recently announced as the Holy Savior Menard basketball coach up in Alexandria. He's going to chat with us at 6. And in between all that, Clint and I are going to hit on all those topics and more, because there is an awful lot going on this weekend, as we mentioned.
It's a good Friday, man, to kind of get into brass tacks. It's weird, because usually around like the second week of June, we already kind of know how things are going to go. Usually you're getting that much closer to Omaha and LSU. It feels like most years are always going to be a team that feels penciled in. Obviously, sometimes you just got to erase things, a lot like a couple years ago when LSU got bounced out in the regional against Oregon State. But now I feel like this team, the way they performed over this past weekend, I think I'm starting to get ready to etch them into it. So because it just feels like this is that, I said it last week, win one for the Gipper, and I'm feeling a lot more confident about that more now than maybe I was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I was telling a few people this week, I feel, for whatever reason, I guess just the momentum piece and having seen the way things went up in Eugene, more confident about the Tigers now heading to Knoxville, despite the fact that I think Tennessee is a superior team to what we saw from Oregon, both fantastic teams. But the last time we had seen LSU on a diamond going into that regional weekend was a really disappointing performance in the SEC tournament against Georgia. And they came out to open the regional series in Eugene and dropped their first regional opener since 1985. And things were just not looking or feeling particularly good after that 3-0 loss to Gonzaga. Next thing you know, somewhere probably a little bit more of a back-and-forth game against Central Connecticut than people would have liked, somewhere things started to kind of click, and then by the time they got to Gonzaga on Sunday morning and that first matchup with Oregon on Sunday evening, it felt like LSU had kind of clicked a little bit, found its swagger. They weathered that early storm with that regional opening loss, and then every punch that Oregon had for them Monday night, they had an answer, and then had, you know, a little bit of that postseason LSU magic with the balk late to help matters as well. And so you just kind of carry that momentum on now.
It's still mind-blowing the fact they actually decided to walk a guy that had never probably stolen a base, not just at LSU, but his entire life. And it's like you know, think about it. In the world of baseball nowadays, like of analytics, where you're probably breaking down every single spot that you have. Oh, wait. This guy has never stolen a base in his life. Let's go ahead and just keep
throwing over there.
Yeah, keep throwing over there, and then eventually you'll get a balk that costs you. Like, we've been talking about it a lot this week. That's a play that probably is going to be haunting this kid, not just for years, but I think possibly for the rest of his professional career. If he has a professional career, that's something that's going to eat at him, because he knows, like, he single-handedly costs his team the game.
Yeah, they'll probably try to do their best to hide that one away up in Eugene. But you're going to be in Louisiana. We're going to see that on the loop for a while. It's going to be one of those, particularly if you see them go win this weekend and just this Eugene regional becomes a piece of that deep of a run, you're going to see that as a moment that people go back and relive. I was watching that thing from home on my couch, and I don't know that I was crying laughing, but I could not believe that that's how that went down, and they are able to go get another run in that fashion.
It was just something you'd never really expected to see from LSU. Like, from Oregon, it's like everything was going their way, and then you go ahead and have a moment like that where you're shaking your head the entire time.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was, I told someone Tuesday asking about the game, it was a great game in the sense of entertainment value, but it was just wild. It was one of those games that the Twitter timeline was kind of a chorus of people saying, this game is drunk right now, is the way that we phrase that these
days.
And
to a certain extent, that felt like the entire Oregon regional after the first day. Because you had LSU win in extra innings against Central Connecticut State. Let's be honest, if any other LSU team had even struggled against Central Connecticut State, we would have probably asked for the head of Paul Manieri over that. Then you have them win against Gonzaga in a game that was, relatively speaking, pretty drunk for the first couple innings. Things got back under control. Then you had a really wildly entertaining Oregon game. Like, that entire Eugene regional was apropos of LSU season, but it felt like the exact opposite especially when you look at Sunday. Because LSU, for a good bit of the season, especially on Sundays, it felt like everything that could go wrong would go wrong. This was the exact opposite, especially on the pitching side. The fact they were able to save their guys for Monday was massive.
Yeah, I think some of those pitching performances, getting just some key innings here and there, guys like a freshman Will Helmers having the performance he had Monday night, just seeing some of those pitchers stretch and throw several innings in their games and keep some of those teammates fresh, like a Javon Coleman, the performance that he put out there, I think that is one of the biggest points of encouragement for me as they now head on to Tennessee. If you can get some guys that can go out there, eat up some innings, and keep the Vols from having some huge crooked numbers up on the scoreboard, then I think LSU can put a few runs on even a good Tennessee staff right now, particularly the way you look at Gavin Dugas and company swinging those bats. And I think things can get really, really interesting, and that LSU has as good of a chance as anybody of advancing to Omaha.
Oh, no, they have – it's just the momentum. And it's weird to say that, because you think about it, it's a different series. You're going from the West Coast to the East Coast. It's not as much momentum, I think. It's the fact that just the energy is there. And that was missing from this team, I think, for a good while. Now you look at this team, and they have every chance to do what they've set out to do since the beginning of the season and get to Omaha. But I think now, with everything going on, it means that much more to say, hey, let's win one for the old Gipper. Let's win one for Paul Manieri. I've gotten people tweeting at me and called in during the show earlier this week and were saying, hashtag miracle for Manieri. So I think that's something on people's minds, and it's definitely on the kids' minds out there in Knoxville as they wrapped up practice today.
Yeah, and we'll have to ask Reggie some about that when he joins us at 4:30. But I agree, as much as they've tried to downplay that sort of thing, especially Coach Manieri has tried to downplay that sort of thing. He's someone that has been very significant to that program.
It's kind of hard, though, right, to downplay that kind of thing. Like, whenever you know, like, hey, if you lose two games, be it here or at, the College World Series, your career is over and done with. Like, you know that there's finality coming. You just don't know where it is.
Yeah, for sure. And he's played such a huge role for not just this program, but among the most prominent figures in college baseball for over a decade now. It feels crazy to realize that he's been there 15 years already. They mentioned Alan Dunn the other night in his 10th year with LSU, and I remember him arriving, and it doesn't feel like it's been that long, but you look at the numbers they've racked up, and on top of that, the significance that he's had to so many of those young players coming through, young players and their families, and the reverence they have for him sort of thing. And we'll talk to Blake Dean some about that here shortly, but that's pretty top of mind for certainly the players, the fan base, and everyone that has been around some purple and gold baseball for quite a while.
And what do you think is going to be the biggest key this weekend in your mind for LSU baseball to actually come away with that series win? Is it going to be the pitching, or is it more getting consistent hitting from 1 through 9? Because at the end of the day, we know what Dylan Cruz and Trey Morgan can do. Gavin Dugas has been coming in with a big stick as of late. Drew Bianco has his moments. But I think you need to have, for me at least, I need to have a more complete performance out of your boys the rest of 1 through 9 rather than just 2 or 3 guys, because that's not going to get you anywhere against a really good pitching staff in Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think the issue with LSU through a lot of the season has just been consistency in general and putting both of those pieces together. And so that, to me, kind of stands out. For whatever reason, I have confidence that some of that offensive energy that they've had going is going to continue and that they're going to be able to hit enough and score enough in Knoxville. And I'm interested to see if the pitching performances carry over. That's something that I think people were frustrated with different pieces of that Friday night loss. And you look at what they did in terms of, I think, going 0-for in that game with runners on base, and you're not going to win a lot of games like that. But on the flip side, they were walking a ton of Gonzaga batters, and that came back to bite them because they got out of some situations. Gonzaga left a lot of guys on base, but they had so many on base that they were able to get those 3 across and come out of there. And I think the series last time out in Knoxville, those 3 close games, a 3-1 loss, a 9-8 loss in 11 innings, and a 3-2 loss in 8 innings of the last game of a doubleheader to end that weekend as they headed back to Baton Rouge, they put a lot of guys on base with free passes, and that's something that they can't go up there and do again if they want to come out victorious this time around and keep on pushing this thing.
No doubt in my mind, you need to have these guys perform, get to be there. But I think it's just so much fun to see this LSU team get back in there. And they have a chance, have another chance to get back to Omaha, because it'd been a little while since we've been in that spot. Obviously, the Florida State Super Region the last time you were able to have a playoffs, 2018, the Oregon State situation. This is a time where if you can get to Omaha, that's going to be great building for the future, because you know, having all these young guys and knowing, hey, we're getting to this point, that'd be massive.
No doubt. I like, as we waited to see what the NCAA tournament draw was going to be and if the Tigers were going to make it in, I saw some fans say it's just going to be a waste of time, they'll be in and out sort of thing, and if anything, it has not been a waste of time because it's been entertaining as heck, and they obviously have some success in Eugene and move it forward in Knoxville. And again, we'll talk to Blake Dean here in just a moment about that and then go to Reggie Chapman up in Knoxville. Make sure you stick with us for those guys, as well as the rest of the show, as we talk more LSU baseball, recruiting, NBA playoffs, and on and on. We're broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studios in Carancro, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Make sure to stick with us here on 103.7 The Game with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Hit high, hammered to left field. Going back, taking a look is Holcomb, and it's gone!
Who will become the next LSU baseball legend? Keep it locked here to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station for live LSU baseball all season long. Now, back to more 103.7 The Game, your home for LSU baseball.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. As we have mentioned a couple of times, and you'll hear throughout the show, the LSU Tigers are taking on the Tennessee Volunteers in the NCAA Knoxville Super Regional. The opening game of the series is on Saturday, with pregame coverage beginning at 5:30 and first pitch set for 6. You can listen to all the action right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. And as we mentioned right before the break, we've got a guy who has played some big games in his own right for those LSU Tigers just a few years back when I was in school, maybe a few years further back than Blake and I would like to admit. Now he's the coach of the UNO Privateers. Blake Dean joining us to talk some about LSU heading up to Tennessee, the home stretch of Coach Paul Mineri's coaching career and everything in between. Blake, appreciate you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. How's everything been going on y'all's end as y'all kind of turn the attention to the summer and everything on the heels of y'all's season?
It's been good. You know, we had a good year. Obviously, wanted to finish a little bit better in the tournament, but our highest conference finish yet, so finished up second overall. So we did really well, but got recruiting back on the board now with the COVID. That's been shut down for over a year, so they just put that back into place where we can start doing that. So everyone's hot on the trail again, just trying to it's a rat race. You know, just the new portal, the kids transferring left and right. So it's just we're running around like a chicken with our head cut off trying to figure out what we want, where we got to go with it.
Yeah, I imagine it's been pretty crazy on that side of things. We have a football prospect from here in Lafayette who just had a huge camp over at LSU this weekend and picked up some offers, and just kind of seeing the quickness with which everything started flying June 1st, as you guys were able to get face to face with some of those high school kids again, and just some of the energy that's been there. Y'all have been chomping at the bit to get with them. They've been chomping at the bit to get with y'all. And so I imagine it's been quite a whirlwind the past 10 or 11 days.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, you know, to be honest with you, as much as I didn't like it before, you know, a lot of these kids were committing, making recruiting a little bit easier because they could come visit. It was kind of making the process move a little bit quicker because you couldn't come see them play. They were kind of hesitant about not getting offers. And, you know, everyone was kind of, you know, just out there on the same page, having to call their connections, and you know, you couldn't go see these kids. You were relying on video and sources, and so it's interesting now you're kind of back on the grind. The page has changed, and you're trying to, you know, keep up with everyone else, go see as many guys as you can. And it's, again, it's just one of those things that's never ending. It just continues and always is forever going.
How much of the Tigers did you get a chance to watch in between all of that last weekend? They had those five games out in Eugene, certainly a little bit disappointed to drop that first one, and then they just come roaring back through the weekend, kind of gaining momentum all the way through that dramatic victory Monday night to advance to the Supers.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I caught most of it. You know, I try to watch them as much as I can whenever, you know, I'm not don't have something on my own going on with the team or something. So I got to watch them, you know, like you said, drop that first one, and then again, they always, you know, you can never count them out. You know, I think they've kind of been up and down, obviously, all year. A lot of people kind of pushed them out of the equation, but again, they always find ways to get it done when it matters. So they're going right, getting it going at the right time, and obviously going into a tough super regional, it'll be a pretty interesting series.
It's been a while since you guys saw them in person earlier on this season in a matchup between UNO and LSU, and so a lot has certainly changed and developed, and they've been through their share of up and downs. But as you watch where they seemed to be in that Eugene regional and now turning the page to Tennessee, a team that they dropped three against in Knoxville a couple months back, what are some of the keys that stand out to you of what you feel really good about going into this matchup now versus some things that may be kind of pivotal X-factor type components for the Tigers?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, their offense. You know, I say offense. Everyone's going to, you know, you got to score runs, right? You know, their pitching is going to give up some runs. That's just kind of been the MO all year. You know, they had the freshman step up in the regional. The lefty, I don't remember his name, but stepped up through what, maybe six innings to get into that championship game. So they're going to need guys like that to step up and do some stuff that they, you know, you got to go above and beyond in these certain situations and tournaments and super regionals. Certain other guys got to step up, and then they got to hit. You know, I like the Bianco move in center. You know, I would never envision Bianco as a center fielder, but he brings some, you know, some energy, he brings some life. He brings another bat in the lineup. You know, he may go 0-for-4, but that one time he could hit a 2-run homer, you know, and, you know, surge those guys. So again, a lot of teams now relying on the long ball. I mean, LSU's kind of done it all year. So it's, you know, it has its advantages and its disadvantages, but, with Cruz and Morgan and those guys, I mean, that, the top of that order is pretty good, and those young guys are really good as well. So they just got to, my opinion, they got to have somebody step up on the mound outside of the Marceaux and the Hilliards and guys of that and Labus, and they got to have some young guys kind of fill some roles and, again, try to score as many runs as they can.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at. You mentioned the lefty, Javen Coleman, who was able to extend and eat up some innings, some really quality innings, and I think if you see them – have some guys like that on that pitching staff, a Coleman or a Will Helmers who came in and had a couple of huge innings, that you feel pretty good about going up there and really battling with Tennessee. Those were all three very close games where LSU walked a lot of guys and kind of put themselves in some bad spots. But if you can have some things go the right way, the way that they went for stretches of that Eugene regional, then LSU looks like they've got as good a chance as anybody to advance through this weekend and be one of the eight left standing in a few days.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. There's no question. Tennessee's, you know, had the magic all year. I mean, the walk-off they hit, I saw, you know, they were losing. I can't remember who it was, but in the region they got, you know, we're down three, hit a grand slam to win it, you know, pretty impressive. So they've got the magic. Obviously, they're in their home stadium. You know, it'll be a little rowdy. But again, you know, those young guys, I think that's why people for LSU, why people have always kind of this year have, you know, kind of been on the Tigers' back and, you know, a little upset is, hey, look at it. They got good players, but they're young. They're young. Yeah. Helmers can go out there and look really good one day and look bad the next. The Coleman kid, people are going to say, well, why hasn't he thrown more? Well, again, he could throw a real roll one game, and being young, he'd go out there and struggle the next. And that's kind of the ups and downs of having so many young guys. I mean, yeah, everyone wishes they could have a Cruz and a Morgan, you know, two top-tier freshmen that can really play. But you got to weather the storm. You got to stay healthy. But they're, again, they have that belief. They're playing good right now, so I think they're capable of anything.
Everybody wants to criticize and ask why is an 18 or 19 year old inconsistent? Remember when you were 18 or 19 years old? Is kind of the response. You have your good days and your bad days, and it's learning experiences all the way.
That's right. That's right. You got to take in the good with the bad, and the more they play, the more confident they become, and they'll limit those mistakes. But I think again, I think those guys have just kind of bounced people around. They faced injuries all year with the Giacomo and different things like that. Travinsky gets hurt. You know, Milazzo's catching every day, which, again, he's a really good catcher. But, you know, just they've been moving some pieces around. It's not, you know, it's hard. It's hard. It's easy for me. Even when I was an assistant, it's easy to say, you should have done this and you should have done that. Once you're the one writing the lineup and making the decisions, that aspect changes quite a bit.
You were there in Coach Mannering's early days at LSU when he first was getting started in Baton Rouge and obviously had a chance to have a fantastic college career and then keep in touch, be around the program, come back to Louisiana, and then end up moving on to UNO and now having the perspective of another college head coach and you guys play one another year in, year out. As you look at these 15 years that Paul Mannering has had in Baton Rouge and just the quality of coach and man leading that program, how do you kind of put some of that in perspective as a guy that certainly knows what it means to wear purple and gold and to be around him as a player and now as a coach?
Well, I think first off, I mean, what he's done is, you know, people always want more. I said this, you know, the other day to somebody, people always want more. I mean, you look at his track record and it's been pretty impressive. I mean, was he one of only five coaches ever to have over 1,500 wins in the national championship, something like that? I mean, now, again, you know, it's got to the point to where, you know, people were riding him all year, upset with LSU baseball. I mean, what he's done over the course of 15 years is impressive. I mean, it's unbelievable to win as many games as he has, go to Omaha a couple times, you know, win, what, six SEC tournaments. I mean, again, you're talking about stuff that, you know, everyone wants the next best thing, but you got something pretty good in front of you. So, for me, it's just been a pleasure, obviously, to play for him and to build a relationship outside of the player relationship, more to the coaching side of things now. I've enjoyed it, and I'm just I wish him the best. Obviously, now he's get to relax a little bit once this year's over with, and from there, I'm very interested to see what their next move is and, you know, where the program will head after this.
Yeah, I think we're going to end up talking some more about that later on in this hour, but from your perspective, and you were on staff there at UNO last couple of years for Coach Maestri, and saw that end of a coaching career. As much as Paul Mannering tries to downplay this idea of going and extending his career and winning for him and the significance to the players and that being on their mind, how does that factor in for, you know, even as much as he may try to block it out for players on that team or assistants on that staff or other people around the program, how much are they thinking about that? How much are they able to kind of put that out of mind? What's the balance there?
I mean, I think everyone thinks about it. They know about it. But at the same time, they've played so many baseball games. He's coached so many baseball games that once you get going in the game, you're not thinking about that. You know, you're not thinking about, oh, if we don't win, you know, his career's over. I'm sure at some point it crosses some guys' minds, but again, they've played so many games. They've been prepared. You know, it's almost like, you've created a robot almost, right? They know what to do. This is our routine. This is what we do. This is how we go about our business. And so those guys are prepped. They're ready to go. I don't think it affected that much, but there would probably be certain points, winning or losing, that you reflect on it for a brief moment. But outside of that, I don't think it really has too much of an impact, honestly.
And they've got at least two or three more games this weekend in Knoxville, and then we'll see what happens from there. Blake, appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat, and I know you'll be watching.
No doubt, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Thanks, man. Again, that's Blake Dean, the head coach at UNO, former LSU baseball player who played for Paul Menard in some of the early days of his coaching tenure down in Baton Rouge. Make sure to stick with us here on 103.7 The Game. We'll be right back with Reggie Chapman of WBRZ and more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. A reminder that it is time to show dear old dad how much he means to you with the 103.7 The Game's Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes, powered by Cajun Gun and Gear. We are giving away a $500 Visa gift card, and you can score that for your pops by simply signing up for the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse Rewards at 1037thegame.com today. That's the Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes, powered by Cajun Gun and Gear and 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. The last time I read that promo, we had Michael Cauble on his way back from the SEC tournament, and I joked that his work kids, so to speak, Reggie and Matt, should maybe take heed of that work dad didn't need another tie this Father's Day. And now we've got Reggie Chapman Jr., who's up in Knoxville, ready for the Tigers Super Regional against Tennessee. Reggie, how's that work? Do you get work dad Cauble a gift for Father's Day or no?
I'm thinking about it, and honestly, man, you've given me a pretty good idea. So, I mean, look, he worked hard this year. He gives me some opportunities, like sent me out to Knoxville. So, I mean, I can't be mad at him. So, he'll probably be getting a gift from me, for sure.
I see that you've been around campus, certainly around town a little bit since you got up there. How is Knoxville treating you so far? How are you treating Knoxville? Just what's the vibe?
Knoxville's been cool so far, man. And look, I haven't been around too much. I got to drive around, been on and off campus a little bit, and been able to tour. The campus is cool. I mean, it's nice. And the stadium, it's nice. It's just not Alec Box Stadium. But I think more importantly, what I want to talk about is, I mean, just walking around and talking with people and telling people what I'm in town for, because they see me with this camera in my hand. They're like, oh, are you in town for the baseball game? The energy in this city this weekend is going to be on another level. I mean, so much so, the tickets for this weekend have already been sold out. There are standing room only tickets that are potentially available if you get to the box office early enough. And even after that, I mean, this stadium that seats is just a little bit over, I think, 4,200 people. It's going to be full. And outside, they're actually hosting something called the Big Orange Block Party, which is a chance for fans that can't get in to be able to experience the game right outside the stadium on the street next to it, be able to watch the game, got vendors, got food, got drinks. I mean, this is a big weekend in Tennessee, man. It's the first time they've ever been in this capacity, being able to host a super regional. So they're blowing it out in a big way, and it's going to be electric this weekend at Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
Yeah, the stadium's between a half and a third the size of Alec Box, but the anticipation as soon as this matchup was set was for a lively, raucous, kind of hostile environment for the Tigers to be heading into. As you had a chance to go over and see LSU kind of check out the stadium, have their brief walk through and get ready for tomorrow night's opener. What's the mood around those guys getting a chance to go back and, you know, revisit a place where they had a disappointing regular season series, but one that I think they walked away knowing that they were capable of more?
Yeah, man. I mean, just leaving from practice about 30 minutes ago, the team seems really loose and just ready to go, man. I mean, I think they're playing with reckless abandon, knowing that at the end of the day, man, they're playing with house money, man. They're out here just trying to represent their coach and do it a big way. And I think there's also some confidence in the fact that if you really think back, that series that they lost to Tennessee was on the second week of the SEC schedule. I mean, this team is significantly different from then. I mean, you got guys contributing in ways that weren't contributing back then. Guys in the lineup that were not in the lineup back then. I mean, people and these freshmen on this team are no longer bothered by the reckless crowds and big names. And I think really the only reason that, you know, head coach Palmieri talked about, you know, some of the issues with the fans in Tennessee is because it was a limited capacity crowd. And you could hear them very clearly. But, I mean, there's going to be a packed crowd out here. It's going to be loud. But you're not going to be able to hear each individual fan, you know what I'm saying, yelling at one certain player the entire game, which will make things a little bit easier. But, I mean, the Tiger team has grown up, I mean, in a big way. And, I mean, these big, reckless crowds are nothing different. I mean, especially based on the fact they had to go through it at Ole Miss when they had a full-capacity crowd. So, I mean, they feel good about their chance. They feel good about the situation. And they know that, you know, they have a good chance to really make some noise this weekend.
You were up there in Oregon a week ago and saw some of those – I don't want to say that they came out of nowhere, but some of the younger guys stepping up in the biggest stages of their careers thus far. As you look at some of those fresh faces, what they were able to do and how you think that can potentially carry over and just kind of build upon that now, it sounds like you're pretty confident they can keep some of those same sort of things going, both some young pitchers like a Helmers as well as some of the young bats in the lineup and defenders in the field, because you saw some great plays at times later on in the weekend on that side as well.
The funny thing is, I think you feel pretty good. When you look at how both Dylan Cruz and Trey Morgan, your two best hitters, both freshmen, played over the last two games, I think they were combined 1-for-12 over the last two games, and they managed to win both of those. I mean, guys are stepping up in a big way for this LSU Tiger team. You know, of course, the veterans that needed to step up, but then some young guys. I mean, you can't say enough about the play of Javen Coleman, who was able to go out there and pitch very, very well over last weekend in a hostile environment in Eugene, Oregon, halfway across the country, man. So, I mean, that's really what it is. This team no longer, and we've heard them say it, they no longer feel like the moment is too big for them. They feel like, you know, they're right where they need to be. They're no longer, you know, technically they're still listed as freshmen. They no longer feel like freshmen because they've seen everything. They're road dogs, and, you know, they're excited to be able to have that back against the wall mentality and really show what they can do out here in Knoxville this weekend.
They announced the rotation this weekend a short time ago, right before we were going on the air for this show. And so you get Mikhail Hilliard tomorrow and then Marceau in game two and potentially A.J. Labus in a pivotal, you know, series deciding third game. What was some of the conversation from Coach Maneri and company about that? I don't know if you guys had a chance to talk to Hilliard and just what he said about opening things up, but just your reactions and some of the early feedback on the way that they went with the rotation.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we actually just got off a Zoom call with him a couple of minutes ago. Mikhail Hilliard says it's really got to be nothing different for him. I mean, he's pitched in big moments before, and I guess Paul Maneri trusts him. I mean, he's pitched very, very well since they put him back in a rotation the back half of the season. He's a guy this team trusts very well, so he's going to get the start on Saturday. While they also feel really, really good about their chances on Sunday when you throw a guy like Landon Marceau. I mean, they just wanted to give Marceau an extra day to rest his arm after pitching in that finale against Oregon last Monday. So, it was really just a chance for the guys to kind of get rest a little bit. Mikhail is ready to go. Landon Marceau is in a big spot, too, because either that's going to be a spot where the Tigers either saving their season or potentially getting themselves to Omaha. So they like the way that their things are kind of matched up, and they like how things look for their pitching this weekend. And they now know that they've got guys in the bullpen that they can rely on, freshman guys like Will Helmers, who was listed as a freshman All-American or SEC All-American, and then Javen Coleman. I mean, Garrett Edwards pitched very, very well. And then, of course, you got veterans like Trent Bittmeyer, who really showed a lot of guts and who could talk about more than the performance of Devin Fontenot over the weekend as well, coming up big in multiple spots. So, I mean, this Tiger team feels good about where they are as a pitching staff. Maybe the best they have in a while, because they're playing so well on the road in Oregon last weekend.
We talk about all the orange energy around town. I know Tennessee only has a small number of tickets that were set aside for LSU fans, but I know a few folks that have headed up that way, and I don't know if they're there yet or they're a little bit behind y'all, but have you seen some purple and gold start trickling into Knoxville a little bit?
Not yet. It is early. It is early. I mean, I got here yesterday, so I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of purple and gold, but I mean, I know they're on the way. I mean, I can only imagine. And every time I throw up a tweet about anything about, you know, this team or this weekend, it's a conversation. You know, where are the bleachers going to be? Where are we going to be sitting? Where is our location? You know what I mean? So it's a big deal for Tiger fans, and you know, they've been talking a lot about, you know, making fun of Tennessee and their school and their facilities. I mean, this is a game that people really care about, and I anticipate Tiger fans, like they did to travel to all the way to Eugene, Oregon, will be out here in full force this weekend in Knoxville.
Yeah, if they can make it to Eugene, they can certainly make it to Knoxville. And as I mentioned, I know some folks that are on the way, and will be in that stadium with you guys this weekend. Reggie, appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know it's a busy day, just getting ready, getting all the preview content out.
Busy day, man. And make sure you tap into our preseason or our game day special tomorrow morning at 9:30 on WBRC.
There you go. Thanks again, man.
Thank you.
He's Reggie Chapman Jr. from WBRZ. Make sure to keep up with all the content those guys are pushing out this weekend. They've done a great job covering the team all season and certainly through this postseason run. He was out on the West Coast at the Eugene Regional last week. He's up in Knoxville this weekend for the Supers. And they do a great job. You just got to watch out for the curse of Reggie. If he starts to say too much positive, things kind of go bad for LSU. But I think he learned his lesson at some point around midseason, and he's made the adjustments, and we've seen it pay off.
All right, worst curse in Louisiana sports. Is it the curse of Reggie, or is it the curse of Lopes?
They're both so bad. I think about...
You kind of led me right into this one.
Yeah, I think about the curse of Lopes every time.
It wakes you up in a cold sweat.
Every time Reggie has come up on Twitter as a Reggie curse, I think about how bad Lopes' was. And I think people talk so much about Reggie's right now. It's more fresh, I guess, and particularly when you look at an LSU baseball team that he's covering and they play as many games as they play. But looking at Lopes' track record through the years, when he was coming up through preps and then he took over LSU when I left the Times-Picayune, and how badly it swung. Wherever he was, that team was having trouble, no matter where it was. And
he was just there, and
it was just bad.
Bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think...
And to a certain extent, you could say it's carried over to the New Orleans Pelicans. I hate to say it, because I know he's more like Pelicans / National now that he's with the 4-Letter Network. I still feel like maybe there's some curse of Lopes hanging around that Pelicans franchise these days.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that when they... So, the Pels got the first pick before he got his new
yep.
job, and then Zion goes through everything he did at the start of his career, just trying to get back healthy, get back right, be 100%. And so we watch Lopes reporting on when is this fantastic young player actually going to play? Is a lot of the start of their careers in their respective spots. And now they're missing the playoffs. Shoot, if you want to talk about his reach and being able to cover some coast-to-coast NBA and not just being
yeah.
pigeonholed into the Pels, maybe the pandemic's his fault. I don't know. Maybe we had a bubble because of Lopes.
Next time you fill in, you need to like get Lopes on to kind of like either prove the theory right or shoot it down, one of the two. I'm sure he'll shoot it down more often than not. I know the pandemic's not entirely his fault, but my God.
He couldn't help.
You've stumbled upon a great theory.
There's no way he helped.
No, not at all.
Yeah, we were trying to grab lunch today in Baton Rouge before I headed out, but he was in a little bit of a rush through town. I was a little bit busy trying to play some catch-up on some things, so hopefully we'll get a chance to link it up soon, but... Let's take a quick break, come back, and then Clint and I are going to talk some about this whole LSU baseball coaching search dynamic that Blake Dean alluded to. Stick with us on 103.7 The Game with more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back right after this break.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Get in on the conversation. Call the game hotline, 706-0111, 706-0111.
Back on 103.7 The Game with more bumper-to-bumper sports. Jarrett Roser here with Clint Domingue. And everybody loves winning free stuff, and you can score big today by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It's free to join, and you'll have the opportunity to score free stuff like a $40 gift card to Dickie's Barbecue Pit. You can also win that $40 gift card to Dickie's Barbecue Pit by joining the 103. You can only win that $40 gift card to Dickie's Barbecue Pit by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. So go sign up today. We had joked my last time out here about whether Andrew Lopez could get that out of Ray Parch without signing up, and
he just immediately shot that down.
It was
live as
no.
It happened.
Yeah, Ray poked his head in and shook his head no and said absolutely no go, and that has not changed.
Yeah, definitely can agree with that. But I was blown away by like just how much. Something else you mentioned like the last time you were here, that every time you've gone from here to Baton Rouge, it's rained on your way back.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's another curse too. The curse of Roser coming from like Baton Rouge to Lafayette and going back, he'll have that rain coming to him.
Yeah. It's only one time has it been really bad, but every time I've gone through just like a little rush of rain and it's kind of made me think, is it telling me to not come to Lafayette or is it telling me to not leave Lafayette? Because it could go either way. It never rains on me on the way here, but the way out, it's been problems.
Just know it never rains in Tiger Stadium, except for that one time.
Yeah. Never rain. I've been in some downpours and look at people and they're just saying it's a stiff dew or whatever Les Miles and company used to say.
I just remember that one time when you had a LSU McNeese and the game just got completely canceled due to that rain that they probably wouldn't call rain.
Yeah, that was a memorable one. I remember being as a student in some of those old days I referenced when Blake might not have even, I was a year or two ahead of Blake at LSU, and so he might not have even been there, but I remember being stormed on for a South Carolina game. I think it was the crazy fake field goal over the shoulder game. We caught some rain in that one, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was that same year.
It sounds about right.
So Blake Dean, UNO baseball coach, he alluded to the fact that he's interested to see how this coaching search shapes up. And I don't know if we have full time in this hour to get completely into it, because it's been kind of a wild one the last few weeks, to say the least. But, I mean, you hear O'Sullivan's name from Florida come into play and then out and then back in at one point. Pat Casey's name was the big one to come up this week and then ends up being out of the mix, and so we're still waiting to see exactly what direction things go there. And I think it's been interesting because there have been some great names attached to it, and the two that have at different points come to the forefront more than others are the two that I would have the biggest problems with. And so now we wait to see what happens.
All right. So who's that? Like, you're the two guys you'd have the most, like,
so Sully, there's some baggage going on with him in Florida and just, I don't know, some different energy with him that he would bring to the program for all the success he's had on the field and national championship coach and all those things. And same deal with Pat Casey, a guy who is...
Yeah, obviously Casey, we all know what's going on with him. I just want to know who the other guy was that you're kind of like...
Yes, I didn't really want O'Sullivan to end up being the coach.
Gotcha.
I largely, at this point, I don't get as invested in some of these coaching searches to a point of having one person. I kind of, particularly early in Scott Woodward's tenure, feel like his track record has given reason to give him benefits of the doubt that he's going to go get his person, not just his man, but Kim Mulkey, I thought was a really big hire, obviously,
yep.
that they're going to have a lot of success with that program. For him to identify that person, make it happen, and it to be a good hire, and he's done that his entire career everywhere he's been. And I think with some of these other options, Mike Bianco at Ole Miss, Cliff Godwin up at East Carolina, if they backed the truck up and were able to pull Tony Vitello from Tennessee, Jim Schlossnagel before.
That was my guy. Jim Schlossnagel, I was like, this is the guy that I think you could wind up getting. And somehow, some way, Texas A&M decides to poach a guy from in-state. That was a mind blow for me, because it's like, you think about it, you would never see an in-state coach from like Louisiana baseball jump ship and go over to LSU. Like that it'd feel like, especially, it'd be like a moral sin when you think about it.
Yeah, I'm sure the folks at TCU are not real pleased with us.
No, exactly. But I'm saying, like, I'm blown away by that.
Yeah, but he was somebody that I would have been fine with. I think most of the names you've seen pop up, I feel like there's a lot of positive there, and you can pull. Some of them have that LSU connection and have won at a high level at an ECU, helping build that program like Godwin. Some have done some really big things at an SEC program like Bianco that doesn't have the same resources as LSU. Yeah. And I think he could, you know, break through that to that next level if he came back to his alma mater. But a lot of positives to take around. But the two that they seem like they've moved on from and vice versa were kind of interesting ones to pop to top of the list at different points. But we'll, as I mentioned, we don't have enough time to get into all of it this hour, but we've got some time next hour, so make sure you stick with us. We're about to go to another quick break, but if you stick with us on 103.7 The Game and more Bumper to Bumper Sports, we've got Fitzgerald West Jr. joining us in just a moment, as well as Tyler Batiste at 5:30 with some NBA playoffs talk and probably a little bit more LSU baseball along the way.
Live and local. This is Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. On 103.7 The Game and live online at 1037thegame.com.
Back on 103.7 The Game with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. We are broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studios. Jarrett Roser here today with Clint Domingue. Make sure you're tuning into the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We also have an exciting new Alexa skill available if you want to go re-add the Alexa skill for the 103.7 The Game so you can listen to Acadiana Sports Station on your Alexa. You've got to keep up with 103.7 The Game anywhere you can. Hopefully you've signed up for the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse. We've mentioned it a few times during the show, so you should have joined by now. It's free to join. You won't be spammed, and you will get the opportunity to enter to win free stuff like a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse or a $25 gift certificate for Mabel's Kitchen at Cypress Bayou. You can only win these by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. And we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have a big guest at 5 o'clock, Fitzgerald West Jr., standout two-way lineman, big athlete for the Lafayette Christian Knights, who is, as much as we talk about the recruiting process heating up for everyone with that June 1st open date, I don't know that anyone's had a hotter week than Big Fitz, with a great camp Saturday at LSU, earning ULM and LSU, and then a couple days later, UL offers. We just talked about it on Louisiana First. All y'all, man, welcome to 103.7 The Game. How are things?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm feeling welcome.
Good deal. That was a good build-up.
Yes, sir.
What's this week been like, man? You go out there to a place where you've had some successful camps and, I mean, been on some visits and enjoyed your time in Baton Rouge, and you go out there Saturday and absolutely crush it. You're winning rep after rep, both sides of the ball. Ed Ogeron's wilding out, pumping his fist, telling Coach Reggie, you were right about this guy. He's balling right now. And then offers from the in-state schools that you didn't already have offers from start filling up that bingo card.
Yes, sir. It started with Coach Reggie working me out, you know, getting me prepared for this camp and just me finishing my job at the camp.
What did it mean to hear from those schools? You had ULM that has that new staff, Coach Bowden and company trying to turn some things around up in that bayou in Monroe. You have LSU, the big home state SEC Power 5 school that you've watched for a long time, and then you have the Cajuns, who have had such great success in recent years, the hometown school that you've had a chance to be close to the last several years of your life since moving to Lafayette at a young age. To have those schools say, we'd love you to come play ball here, how much has that meant the past week?
Well, it's been a blessing knowing that my in-state schools love me enough to offer me, you know. It's really a blessing knowing that I could stay in the state of Louisiana and play college football.
As you weigh out the different factors at play, because it's never just one thing that makes a decision. You know, there's different pieces, different variables of that decision, and you have an announcement that you're planning to make come July 10th. What does that decision process look like for you and your family and your coaches as y'all have those conversations about how to kind of pros and cons or rank these things or just look at it from different angles?
Right now I'm narrowing down my recruitment. I'm focused on the coaching staff, how long are their contracts, and what position you like me as. You know, I'm taking that as a factor. And also cost of recruitment.
Yeah, that's something that we talked about in that the conversation I mentioned we had on the Louisiana versus All Y'all channel. You talk about just that consistency being important, the relationship and them sustaining it throughout. You mentioned the position dynamic too. You're a guy that most people know more from your work in the middle of that defensive line, but as you've grown more and more comfortable and just continue to, I mean, mature physically and in terms of your game and being able to juggle both sides, you've become a really solid offensive lineman, and you showed that again at the camp on Saturday. You go to LSU, and you're able to get your reps in one-on-ones on defense and then quickly jump to the other side and be blocking guys on offense and having a lot of success on that side as well. What does that juggling act look like for you, whether it be during the LCA season or during a camp setting as you're trying to kind of keep up with two different things and a lot of really high-level competition at both?
Well, I'm used to it because in practice, you know, one-on-ones, I flip from both sides. So it's really natural to me. I like just competing. You know, I can play in a position as long as I'm competing. I'm good.
You immediately started saying when colleges were talking this weekend about potentially you being an offensive lineman at the next level, you said, hey, you know, Sam Spiegelman and company, maybe it's time to start calling me an athlete. You want to label me an athlete instead of this D tackle?
Yes, sir.
Take me through
yes,
that.
I most definitely want to be. I want my position to be changed to athlete on Rivals and 247. I'm still waiting on that, but as I just feel like I'm an athlete in all aspects. You know, I can play about 3-4 different positions. I can even play fullback, but no one wants to hear that. But I'm confident in myself that I can play fullback.
I can
carry that rock.
Is there a place on the field where we could put you where you're not going to feel confident? If something happens this fall and Juwan and all the quarterbacks are not feeling great or something, you getting under center?
I could definitely play quarterback. Definitely. Believe it or not, I can actually play DB. Like, I can have some people talk to you about that. I can play DB for sure.
I want to have that conversation. I want to hear more about.
Yes, sir.
Are you out there on an aisle? Are you a corner? Are you back playing over the top? Where are you?
No, I'm definitely a corner. I like to press. You have to talk to Coach Ken. You know Coach Ken from Zachary?
Yeah.
Yes, I worked out with him during the summer and during quarantine at DB. I was doing pretty well. I'm trying to see some footage, but I haven't gotten contact with anybody that was videoing there.
Yeah, we're going to figure that out. If I have to get somewhere and get some video of you working out at corner, we'll make that happen. I love no hesitation from you on either of those questions. Quarterback, no problem. Cornerback, no problem. Fitzgerald West has got you covered. We may have to switch you to athlete if you're doing all that.
I'm telling you, I need it done ASAP.
What do things look like for you right now? We talk about what the decision-making process looks like, but over these next few weeks, as you near that announcement from LCA on the 10th, what are some other stops along the way, trips, things that you have kind of on the schedule?
Coming up, I have LSU, UL, SMU, Colorado, and that's it for right now, but I'll just see, like, when I'm on campus, do I feel like I'm welcome? Does it feel like a home for me for 3 to 4 years, you know?
We've talked before, too, that 21 class that Sage Ryan was kind of the headliner for was obviously a really strong and significant class for LCA. We're freshmen for that first state championship, and Sage was one that played a huge role. You were there as an eighth grader. And then guys like Jordan Allen and Brylan Green and company have continued to come along, and now this 22 class looks like it's as good as any class that's ever come through there. How much do you guys talk about some of those components of that legacy and what you hope to leave here whenever you do start going off to colleges?
Well, first of all, I want to state that I'll be the first in the nation to win all five, you know?
Yeah.
No one has ever done that for sure. So that would be a blessing, you know, just to knowing that from eighth grade on up, I've been competing in the state championship and winning every time.
And I asked you this earlier this week, too. The difference of young eighth grade Fitzgerald West Jr. when we were first just kind of seeing that big body guy and realizing, man, he's got a chance here if he's already that size at that age, to where you are now and some of the things that you're able to bring to the table and just the quickness of that size, the ability to go both ways. How much have you progressed? What are some of the areas that you've been most proud of just these last 5 years to watch yourself as a young man and as a young football player develop?
Yes, so, well, I feel like my football awareness has developed a lot. Also, my body has changed significantly from, I say, eighth grade to freshman year to now. Like, just my body shape is way different. I'm down a little bit in weight, about 20, 30 pounds. So that's a blessing, too.
And looking quick out there, too.
Yes, sir, most definitely. And Coach Reggie developing me from eighth grade all the way to now, you know, teaching me new moves every year and stuff like that.
Who are maybe some guys over there with y'all at LCA? I mentioned Jordan and Brylin and you guys, the senior group, obviously. I alluded to Juwan, who's getting ready for his sophomore year. Who are some guys that fans didn't see a ton of this past fall that you know they need to keep an eye on come this fall?
On the defensive side, I would say me, Macy Lewis, Jordan, Brylin, Braden Ziegler. I feel that Melvin Hills is going to shock a couple people. And Devin Walton on the defensive side. Offensive side, I feel like Cohen Hilaire, he's a wide receiver for us. I feel like our running backs are going to do a great job this year, too, being how diverse they are. And also, our center, Micah Miller, he's going to wake some people up this year for sure.
So that drive for five is certainly alive and well.
Yes, sir.
Turning the four for four like Wendy's into a drive for five.
Yes, sir.
What is something about you that folks maybe don't know, not even necessarily football type stuff? I know you have, and I'll let you pick what it is and not kind of lead you one direction, but I know you have some non-athletic skills that are really intriguing too. You're not only a well-rounded football player, but a well-rounded young man. What's something about you that folks don't know?
Well, my intelligence, I'm very smart. A lot of people don't know that. They see a big guy and just think he's a jock, but I'm very intelligent. And I would say I'm a very outgoing person. I'm very friendly. I love meeting new people. You know, I like to bring the party around for everybody. I like to dance, you know, stuff like that.
Are you the best dancer on the team right now?
Best dancer on the team? Most definitely. No one has rhythm like me at all.
I don't know what world I would have imagined you wouldn't have confidence in that answer, too. Why not?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen anybody on the team that dances better than me. Maybe have some close seconds, you know, like Brylin or Brennan Charles, but nobody could dance as best as me.
Hey, I'm with you. I have not seen anyone on that team dance better than you either. The invitation is open if Brylin wants to get out there and start posting videos on Twitter or whatever.
I don't want to do that. He's shy.
Fitz, man, I appreciate you. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
You got it, man. Again, he's Fitzgerald West Jr., a big, I start to say defensive lineman every time because that's where I've seen him most throughout his high school career, but big athlete, as he says it, on that Knights team that has won four straight state championships, looking for a fifth, and he's got all the confidence in the world and no reason not to. I was kind of alluding to the fact that he was just in a play a few weeks ago and that I was hoping that I was going to be able to get out to Lafayette and support him there. But he's all over the place, man. He is the party.
Oh, no, exactly. And, you know, like when you talk to a lot of high school kids, it's usually, you know, you'll get some good answers out of them, but it'd be few and far between. He's just got confidence for days, brother. I can't wait to see what this guy does.
Brylin has already tweeted at Fitzgerald 9 and said, we're going to have this dance battle, trust me. And so Brylin Green.
Put it on the Twitter, man.
Taking a taking a brief break from his hot recruiting trail to listen to his teammate chat with us this afternoon.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great group right there.
Get him inside the First South Farm Credit Studios dance off. Let's call it.
We're definitely gonna have to make this happen.
Or just go full Zoolander and have it be like the walk off.
Those guys, that whole group, as I was saying, they've been such a tremendous group of football players, but they've just been so much fun to be around. And I know folks out here have had a chance to see them grow up that much more than I even have, just kind of peeking in occasionally for some football games and camps and stuff like that. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they do this fall. Folks certainly knew Sage Ryan because that name became such a huge deal for that LSU recruiting class. But the amount of talent that is still going through LCA is top notch, and that's why they're having all these matchups against the Catholic Highs and Acadianas and all the big schools of the world because they can go with anybody.
And that's really cool that actually, you know, you brought up Catholic High. They're going to be playing at Lafayette Christian Academy. That's like top draw type game. I know everybody in Acadiana is going to want to go to that one, and more likely than not, by then we'll be full gear, full attendance, ready to go, and that place, the night where the night train is, that thing's going to be rocking.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make the trip over here early because I imagine the traffic from Baton Rouge will be large scale coming over that bridge and heading west, and I definitely want to be in attendance for that game. We can talk more about that and all these other topics here momentarily. We're going to take a quick break, more Clint and I after that, and then we're going to get to Tyler Batiste to talk some NBA playoffs here at 5:30. Stick with us on 103.7 The Game for more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it. Okay, it's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Make sure to tune in Saturday for 103.7 The Game's lineup of live and local shows. It all kicks off with First Cup, presented by Bailey Cigar Room from 7 to 9. The professor will have LSUE's seven-time national championship coach, Jeff Willis, joining the program, and that will be followed by Under the Dome with CD from 9 to 11. So tune in Saturday to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, whether you're listening on 103.7 on the radio, watching the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS, or checking out that new Alexa skill. You want to go re-add that Alexa skill for 103.7 The Game so you can listen to Acadiana Sports Station on your Alexa. Wherever you're tuning in, tune in. CD, I appreciate all the J. Cole. I don't know if that's like a bumper-to-bumper staple, if that's every time out here. But
That's 100% a Jarrett Roser tradition.
Yeah,
I love it. When you came on a few weeks ago, our guy, RP3, was like, drop some J. Cole for the man. Since he told me you're a huge fan of him, so I'm like, I might as well... Also make you feel at home and feel at ease a little bit.
I do, man. Every time I hear some instrumental, and it's a lot of it is not the top hits. It's some songs I really like that are kind of that next tier. So, for what it's worth,
I just want to just searching J. Cole instrumental, looked at a playlist, and I'm like, let me check out some stuff that I'm gonna vibe with.
Yeah,
I know there's a couple tracks that I'm like, hell yeah, I gotta throw them in there. But I was like, okay, let me kind of get an idea of like some good J. Cole instrumentals. Yeah. That may be a little more of a deeper cut.
Yeah,
that's how I roll, man.
It's been great. The Happy's in Lafayette closed years back, didn't it? Happy's Irish Pub.
I can't even think of Happy's Irish Pub existing here.
Yeah, so it was briefly at least briefly, just a couple years over by like River Ranch stuff. And
I am legitimately, and you know, I've been here for about 30, yeah. I've lived here all my life. So it's like Happy's Irish Pub. I just don't necessarily, I mean, that was a subsidiary of Walk-Ons, right?
Right. And so the main one is in downtown Baton Rouge, right down the street from where I've lived for years now and where Lopes lived when I switched jobs, but stayed in my same apartment. He moved into the same apartment complex. And so that's kind of become our group that lives in the complex's like neighborhood.
Oh, it was
bar,
by another
so
broken egg.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I was just pulling up because I'm like, again, I just, mind you, that's like from where I'm at in my area, it's like way across town. So Maybe I didn't necessarily always go there. If I went to that part of town, it always would be walk-ons for the most part.
Right.
Because it's, I mean, that was the place to be for a good while.
Yeah.
But we, like right when that opened, that thing was just nuts.
Yeah. I remember being at that walk-ons kind of early on. People love I love walk-ons, shoot. But there was one night in that Happy's on our street in Baton Rouge where Lopes and I are sitting in like a little booth across from the bar near the front of the bar, whatever, the establishment. And two or three girls walk in and we hear one of them tell the friend, oh, there's probably going to be a lot of J. Cole in this bar because there's always just they play a lot of J. Cole in this bar. And I think that was just because maybe they'd only been when I'm there controlling the jukebox. Because I don't know that Happy's is like a consistently J. Cole place.
So like, all right, you're bringing me down a different path, I think. So when you go to the bar, are you the guy that's basically just going to go ahead and throw down a good bit of money
on the
jukebox? Make sure this playlist is completely under your control.
So Ray and Nick were messing with me a couple weeks ago about my lattes, and I think pre-COVID, me and my budget was a much different world, and my latte budget and my Touch Tunes budget were way higher.
Touch Tunes budget is
way
great.
Higher than either one of them should be. When I would look at the end of a month at my email from Touch Tunes of my receipt of this is what you spent through the Touch Tunes app on playing music at Happy's and other places around the city,
just
and around
playing
the country.
All the J. Cole.
Yeah, it was something that I needed to get under wraps, and so, yeah.
I'm sure you're just glad, at least somewhat, the fact that you haven't necessarily been able to go out to Happy's Pub or any of the other like establishments where Touch Tunes is, and I'm sure Touch Tunes has sent an email, hey, we miss you, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I was probably one of their biggest hits during the COVID pandemic, is they're like, where's that Roser dude in Louisiana that's been funding whatever new projects we have for years.
Funding our expansion.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, hey, well, you know, like every other place in America, they've slowed down. But wherever Jet Roser is, like Louisiana's got a lot of love for Touch Tunes, man.
it was to a point where some of the girls at walk-ons, I would be at home writing a story on like a slow bar night, and I would just get a text, hey, can you play some music? And I had the app, so I could just tune in from my apartment and play a couple songs, just dedicate them to whoever's working.
Long distance dedications.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. It's for the best that I had to calm that down.
Yeah.
And just recalibrate, I guess. But I think we can probably get to a break and get back with Tyler Batiste in a second. I know he's going to have some good jukebox stories. We used to run the jukebox of all the bars back in college. I don't even know if they were Touch Tunes yet, and we certainly didn't have the app to control it from our apartment.
No, exactly. Well, back then you probably didn't have like all the apps that could just do everything imaginable, like you do nowadays, where like you can literally. I was seeing like BuzzTime, apparently like, they have an app, and like you can actually. I think during COVID they actually were able to have you like, oh, hey, if you're X amount of distance away from one of our things, you could just go ahead and play it remotely. I'm like, what the hell? This is awesome.
Yeah. Well, shoot, folks were playing HQ Trivia.
R.I.P.
Yeah. I thought that was going to be my ticket to financial freedom.
That was everybody.
Was the, you know, couple cents here, $11 there that you can win off of.
I just remember, like, getting an invite, like, a while back. I'm like, and it's, like, I'd never seen, like, the invite link before via text. I was like, I texted my buddy, like, did your phone just get hacked, dude? Like, like, what are you doing? He's like, just shut up and sign up. I was like, okay, I'll sign up and never use it.
Yeah, man. But as I mentioned, we're going to have Tyler Batiste joining us here in a second. Stick with us. We have lots more fun to talk about. I will probably come back a little bit to that LSU baseball series toward the end. But next up, we're going to have some NBA playoffs talk as Tyler Batiste from The Athletic joins Clint and I. Stick with us on 103.7 The Game for more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. There is no better time than right now to join the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It's free to join, and you will get the chance to enter to win great stuff like a $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink in Broussard. You can only win that $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. So sign up today. And we have my friend, our friend, Tyler Batiste, Tyler J. Batiste, Northside High's finest, now the deputy NBA editor for The Athletic, joining us again to chat some NBA playoffs. Tyler, I just need to, you obviously know I need to know if the Nuggets are going to win a basketball game tonight, because I just have too much money on the Bucks and Nuggets, and I need some things to go as positive as they went late last night for the Bucks.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still first off, kudos to I don't know if you know this, but Booker T's theme music playing coming out of the break, which is one of my favorite professional wrestlers of all time. I was kind of still vibing to that while you were talking.
Well, you know, Clint's in control of the music.
I appreciate that.
Clint's in control of the music, and he knew you were coming, so I think we probably know where that came from.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, man. I mean, I think the Nuggets are. You know, I'm surprised at how well Phoenix played the first couple of games in that series. You know, you would expect the Nuggets to hopefully have a little bit of a bump going back home, and then also, you know, being in front of the home crowd with the MVP and Nikola Jokic. I don't know if there's going to be some sort of pregame ceremony in front of the crowd to kind of, you know, present him with that trophy. The one thing that the Nuggets, I don't want to say have in their favor, but, you know, just kind of a card in their deck that they haven't been able to deploy much, is, you know, Will Barton. He played in game two. He didn't start. He only played about 15 minutes. It's going to be interesting to see how they work him back into their rotation. He was a really big part of the rotation in the regular season. One place where Denver has had such a major disadvantage in this series is in the backcourt. And that's still going to be the case, even if Will Barton, you know, is in there instead of, you know, Campazzo or Austin Rivers, because Chris Paul and Devin Booker are so good. But, you know, he's a guy who can give you double figures, and if he's close to healthy, that's another body that you can use to chase around Devin Booker or Chris Paul or whoever else is on Phoenix. So is that enough to counteract how well Phoenix is playing? I'm not sure, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Denver does get a win tonight, but we'll see.
Need to get that trophy in there. Need to get the people going, whatever it takes to get a W on the Denver side of that series. Otherwise, I'm going to have to start coming up with different acronyms for MVP or something. I don't know. I'm frustrated right now.
I know.
Yeah, you hear as much of it via text every night as anyone about how quickly I went from excited that sports betting was going to be available closer to home in Louisiana to watching how it has unfolded with me having to go place a bet in another state or bets in another state. I'm learning some valuable lessons along the way.
As I told you, that's why they call it gambling, right? It's a gamble.
Yeah, I feel so alive, Tyler. It's been very, very fun. There's not going to be right now a lot of backcourts better than a Chris Paul, Devin Booker combination in the NBA. That's going to be, if you're looking for the better backcourt in a series this time of year, Phoenix has a pretty good one, certainly.
Yeah, and the interesting thing too, not to cut you off, but you know, a lot of times with those backcourts, you can kind of wear some of them down on the defensive end. But Phoenix has the luxury, you know, a lot of times the best perimeter player on the other team is being defended by Bridges, because he's such a great perimeter defender. He's 6'6", 6'7", he's long, he can guard, you know, four positions on the court. So it's not like you can wear down Devin Booker a whole lot on the other end of the court to where he's not going to try to go off for 30 or 40 points. So they've got a lot of tools in their toolbox, and they've been deploying them pretty well.
We'll, I guess, backtrack to a couple of those games from last night before coming back to tonight's other game with Philadelphia at Atlanta. Also wanted to take a moment to shout out your mom and send love her way. I was worried I may have Like, I'm not even going to say it. I forgot to send her a text earlier about a week ago, but I think we cleared some things up. We're on good terms. She's probably going to tell me I did a great job today, regardless of how the back half of the show goes. But I imagine she's certainly tuning in with her actual baby boy, Tyler, on the air. So,
Hi, Mama.
The Milwaukee-Brooklyn game last night, that was a similar situation. Milwaukee needed a win in that series badly and was able to survive both teams struggling offensively for a while and get just enough late and kind of a possession that I think Brooklyn would have liked to have had back at the end of it as well to get in the win column. Do the Bucks now have some momentum you feel like they can build on and make this a series? Do you think I'm going to be all right on the Eastern Conference side of this?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about, obviously they won a game, so you have to have confidence in the playoffs when you win a game, no matter how you do it. But that was a really ugly game to win. I mean, it was 86-83. It was kind of like, you know, reminiscent of some of those, like, you know, Spurs-Pistons finals back from the early aughts of just, like, you know, physical, you know, just grinded out, dogfight type of a game. And so, again, Milwaukee's happy that they won, but it's not like they played a beautiful night of basketball. You know what I mean? I think it's probably, if anything, maybe a little bit discouraging, the fact that they jumped out to, I think it was a 30-11 lead in the first quarter, and they still had to kind of grind their way out and hope Kevin Durant missed a three-pointer at the end for them to actually win the game. So I think part of it is just like how – you know, what kind of a coach Budenholzer is, if he's like hyping those guys up, if they're kind of down on themselves, nobody's really going to know. Bruce Brown obviously was in a position that he probably wasn't anticipating to be in, but, you know, we've got a pretty good story I'll plug over at The Athletic, either coming tonight or early tomorrow, about what kind of went on Bruce Brown with in the locker room after that game and some of the things that some of his superstar teammates told them. So that'll be a good read for anybody who is looking for some NBA coverage over at The Athletic.
If the series stays ugly and physical, I like that PJ Tucker's on that Milwaukee
right.
roster.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what they got him there for when they traded for him, right? They wanted to be have more of a physical presence. You know, they also have, you know, he is coming off the bench, but I'll say Bobby Portis is not someone I want to get in a fight with. Even if I were 6'10" or 7 feet tall, Bobby Portis, who, you know, was a star at Arkansas, he's had some good years in Chicago and elsewhere in the NBA. He's kind of another intimidating presence that can kind of be deployed out there against a team that a lot of people in Brooklyn, you know, probably look at as just kind of a finesse team. They're going to score a bunch of points and not do a whole lot else. So, you know, Milwaukee's definitely lucky to be in 2-1 instead of 0-3, but, you know, all it takes is one game for them to tie back up and go to Brooklyn feeling pretty good about themselves.
Utah came away with another pivotal run to go up 2-0 in that series, the 117-111 defeat of the Clippers. Donovan Mitchell with 37 points, a little scary moment late where he gets put on the floor in the final seconds after a little collision. At one point today, I haven't seen the full clip of it, but I was sent that Stephen A. Smith over at y'all's competitor was saying that Donovan Mitchell is the best player to have played for the Jazz, even looking back to some of those old days. And I don't know how much he's talking about. I mean, clearly he's not talking about the accolades and statistics and all those things, but in terms of just a pure basketball player and the things you can do on the court. What's your take on some of that this early in his career and just midway through a second round series?
I mean, I think I respectfully disagree with Stephen A. Smith. You know,
probably not a first.
Yeah, right. Donovan Smith was a great player. He's been killing the Clippers backcourt and even some members of the frontcourt this series. But, you know, if you're talking around greatest Utah Jazz player ever, you know, I think that conversation kind of starts with Malone and Stockton. And if it's not one of those players, you know, I don't really know what we're saying. Karl Malone is probably, you know, at worst the top three power forward, you know, of all time. If you put Malone, Barkley, and then Duncan in some order there. So is Donovan Mitchell a top three guard of all time? I probably wouldn't say that. Could he be down the line? I guess it's certainly possible, but, you know, nothing against Donovan Mitchell. I just think some of that high praise is a little too premature.
As I mentioned, Philadelphia is at Atlanta tonight for the first game of of the two games tonight. That one's going to start at 6:30, tied 1-1. And so the only even series at this point in this second round. What's your thoughts on where the Sixers and Hawks stand?
I think it's going to be really tough for the Hawks to advance out of this round. Losing DeAndre Hunter, who didn't play in game two and has had some knee troubles over the past few weeks of the season. He's out for the year now. He's going to have knee surgery next week. He's their best perimeter defender. That's kind of the biggest area that Atlanta has struggled this season is perimeter defense. You know, Trae Young, for all of his talent, is not a great defensive player, nor is, you know, Kevin Herter or Bogdan Bogdanovic and those folks. DeAndre Hunter's kind of the person who can defend those big wings, similar to how we were talking about Bridges earlier for Phoenix. So without him and with Joel Embiid seemingly not having any setbacks with his knee issues over the next over the past couple of games, I think it's going to be really hard for Atlanta to not only deal with Philadelphia's size, but also just to be able to stop players like, you know, Seth Curry, who's been going off, you know, the past couple of games. No offense to Seth Curry, but like if Seth Curry is going for 25 a game against you in a series, then like you know, that's not great for your defense, you know. So, but they have Trae Young, arguably, you know, the best player in the series. If you want to say he's better than Joel Embiid, I wouldn't argue with you, but, you know, it's definitely 1-2. So he could get hot, and having that home crowd behind them could certainly give them a lift. But I think it's going to be really difficult for Atlanta to get past Philly.
I'll ask you this, something I saw on Twitter a couple days ago, just one of those little games. If your life is on the line and you need either Giannis or Ben Simmons to hit a free throw, who are you trusting?
I would probably go with Giannis because he's going to take so long to shoot it that'll extend my life a little bit. Like, I feel like I'll take the 12 seconds compared to like the 5 or 6. So, yeah, give me Giannis. Why not?
I've asked you going into the playoffs. We talked about it before the second round started, or as the second round was starting. Now we've seen a couple games in each of these series. If you're kind of recalibrating who you think comes out of each conference, who are you liking right now?
I think I'd probably go with Brooklyn out of the East, just because of the way that they played, even without James Harden. And they showed a lot of metal last night, being down 20 early and fighting back to get into that game in a style of game that they're not accustomed to playing. You know, they want to go up and down and score a lot of points, and they won a game, or almost won a game last night in the 80s. So I think Brooklyn is probably the favorite out of the East. You know, in the West, I think I would probably lean Phoenix a little bit more than Utah, just because I really like the way, not only that backcourt, as we talked about, but DeAndre Ayton has been giving them a lot defensively. And that's one of the big reasons that they're up 2-0 on Denver, is that he hasn't been able to slow down Nikola Jokic, but he's been able to at least offset what he does in terms of kind of points and rebounds and just kind of being a physical presence. You know, if they play Utah, Rudy Gobert is a different player altogether. And if Ayton can at least, you know, try to neutralize, you know, some of the stuff he does, they'll make him work a little harder on the defensive end. You know, I still like that Paul Booker backcourt tandem, especially, again, and also with Utah, Mike Conley has been hurt as well. And you know, that really affects their depth. So I think I would go Phoenix and Brooklyn right now, but I might feel differently come Monday after these weekend's games play out.
Yeah, the ebbs and flows of postseason basketball.
Fun. So fun. So fun.
Less fun when you have money on one of the teams.
It's less fun when you have money on several of the teams.
Yeah, true. To put this more accurately, I guess. Tyler, appreciate you, man.
All right, man. See you.
Later. That's Tyler Batiste, the deputy NBA editor for The Athletic, just kind of updating us on where the playoffs stand. Certainly appreciate him, as always. I really like his take on that Giannis and Ben Simmons question, because I don't think I'd seen that angle to it, but just kind of milking those last few seconds out as Giannis takes his sweet Greek time is definitely one way to look at it.
I agree with you. That was absolutely amazing last night. Just absolutely petty as all get out.
Yeah. That was I was cursing my television in a way I don't think I have about a sporting event. I felt really good about the Bucks going into this series. Really, I guess going into the playoffs, I just felt like this was going to be a year with some of the additions there that they could finally make it through. And as Tyler referenced in multiple different ways, it has not panned out that way early in this series, even during a Bucks win last night.
Can't wait to see what happens tonight, though. I think these two are probably some of the more interesting games in the NBA postseason so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have to keep an eye on that Sixers-Hawks game and then the Suns and Nuggets. We still have a few more segments here on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Make sure you stick with us on 103.7 The Game, and we'll be right back.
Time to open up the vault for the 103.7 The Game's This Day in Sports History. June 11th, 1997. Michael Jordan scores 38 points and hits the game-clenching three-pointer in a 90-88 Chicago Bulls win over the Utah Jazz in Game 5 of the NBA Finals, famously known as the Flu Game. That was This Day in Sports History. We now return to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station, simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And I think we just have a few minutes before we have to go to another break. And so I want to get straight to a surprise guest on the list, a surprise even for me when I get a text a couple minutes ago. I'm just going to let you introduce yourself.
My name is Landry Topaz. I'm definitely not Andrew Lopez from ESPN.com.
No relation.
None at all. But I would like. I was interested. I saw you tweet you and Clint about this this Curse of Lopes thing. I was calling to get more information on that.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, the reporter Andrew Lopez from a certain national network. You know, he has who you clearly have no similarities, let alone relationship with. Right. He's a guy that at every step throughout his sports journalism career, everywhere he goes, L's follow. For whatever team he's covering, whatever athlete he's covering, it does not go well. And you'll watch him switch beats and have a team that was unstoppable suddenly not be able to win, and he'll leave a team that struggled and suddenly they're world beaters. He'll just take one game, a midweek baseball game, and suddenly it's a problem for whatever team he's writing from the perspective of. He goes and covers the Pelicans, and Zion's got all kind of injury issues getting his career started. He picks up some bigger storylines, the basketball world as a whole at a professional level, and suddenly we've got a pandemic and everybody's got to go duck for cover in a bubble. It's pretty wild. Landry, I think, was your
name. Yeah, Landry, that's my name. 100,000% my name. You know, that this fella you're talking about, I think that started when he was covering Tulane, and four coaches got fired in one year, and then he moved to LSU, and within a week of living in Baton Rouge, the Baton Rouge flood of 2016 happened. I don't know if that was his fault. I don't know if the curse extends to natural weather phenomenon. But then Les Miles gets fired a month later, and Johnny Jones gets fired, and his first assignment, I believe I heard. Was actually the LSU Coastal Baseball Super. So obviously that went in LSU's favor, right? Yeah, then the Pelicans in the pandemic. You might be on to something, because once he left LSU, I think is when they won a national championship.
Yeah, I don't know where you read about some of that, but you're absolutely right about the Coastal series and about some of those careers going the way. I was just looking at wins and losses, but you're talking about people getting canned from their alma maters or from longtime positions at the helm of their program. And everywhere that Andrew guy goes, it's just negativity and mess that follows.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I don't know if this guy's your friend or not, but you should probably not try to get a radio show with him anywhere. That might end bad for you.
I will keep that in mind, Landrew, and I appreciate that insight. I hadn't even thought about it, but it sounds like it could be a train wreck waiting to happen if I'm not careful.
Yeah, you might want to be really careful with yourself there.
Appreciate you, Landrew. Everyone, make sure to stick with us on 103.7 The Game for more Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back with Trey Touchette.
Live and local. This is Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. On 103.7 The Game and live online at 1037thegame.com.
Back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studios in Karen Crow, as well as on the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Jarrett Roser here with Clint Domingue and another half an hour of Bumper to Bumper Sports action, little party-size, bite-size hour to close things out. And first up, we've got Trey Touchette, who just a few weeks ago, former STM star, two-time Louisiana Gatorade Player of the Year, was announced as the new head coach at Holy Savior Menard up in Central Louisiana. Trey, long time, no talk other than a couple texts setting this up. How are things, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Things are going good, man. Just happy to be back home in Louisiana and still making the transition a little bit.
Yeah, you headed out to El Paso and then made your way back to McNeese and now getting into the early stages of your coaching career. Have there been some moments in the first month or few weeks or whatever it's been of this where you think, you know what, maybe that Danny Broussard guy wasn't all bad, you know, now I'm seeing it from the coach's perspective and I see what he was going through with us on a day or two here or there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing for right now is I'm still adjusting to the high school game because I played college for 5 years, as you mentioned, and then after I was done playing, I was a grad assistant at St. Mary's College for Randy Bennett in California, and so I was in the college game for 7 years, and so these past couple weeks I have to remind myself the high school game, even though it's basketball, they are different games. So that's, so far, that's been my biggest adjustment.
Just, I guess, from a coaching standpoint in general, I obviously was never a basketball player at your level of basketball. Younger me at my peak was not as good as a young Trey Touchette, far from it. But my brother coming up behind me after me being a decent basketball player, it was so stressful for me to watch him or at a couple of years try to coach him and just try to have that transition of how do I teach him to do something that feels more natural to me. What has that transition been like in big picture in your years out west? Just adjusting to, all right, I could do this at a really high level. How do I share this and coach up some other guys? And now particularly coming back to a high school level where you're coaching young guys some things, probably in some cases for a first time, and getting them to try to come along and learn it, pick it up.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I can do is to not to take anything for granted. When I was out in California at St. Mary's, all of the players I coached were more talented than me because Coach Bennett has a great program. It's a borderline top 25 program every year in the country. And so I think the biggest thing for me out there was keeping things simple, but because they're so talented. And then coming back home to the high school level, I think the same thing, not to take anything for granted, because things that might come naturally to me as a player might be foreign to another kid. So I think the biggest thing I can do is to not take anything for granted, really, really be a good teacher of the game, and really just teach the fundamentals.
It's still early on for you as the head coach there of, you know, running your own program too, but just in some of these first few weeks, what have been some of the initial challenges, hurdles, surprises, learning curves about what it means to not just be that assistant and have your piece of that, but to be the the head of that entire organization, basically?
I would say that the biggest part is just organizing everything because there's so much stuff that goes on. You're not just drawing up X's and O's and telling guys where to go in a drill. You're scheduling practice. You're scheduling weight sessions, especially at the high school level. You don't have a strength coach. So you're doing all that stuff. And as much as I learned basketball-wise, playing for Danny and playing for Tim Floyd and Heath Schroyer at McNeese, these past 2 years I learned an inordinate amount of stuff from Randy Bennett at St. Mary's about organization and running a program and how to organize things and how to treat your assistant coaches and how to treat your players. And so these past 2 years were extremely valuable for me on the organizational side of basketball.
Danny just texted me a minute ago and said, ask him what he's not going to do after playing for me for those years. What did you learn that you're steering clear of?
Oh, man. off the top of my head, nothing, because I loved every second of playing for Danny. And just these past 2 weeks of playing summer league, I find myself calling out 12 after a made basket, calling out five man offensively. So it might look very similar. Hopefully I don't copycat it 100%, but it's going to look pretty similar because Coach Danny was the first coach that had a huge impact on me. And so, you know, if you want to look at how to run a high school program, he's a pretty good guy to look at.
No doubt about it. I mean, a legend in what he does at the high school level, not just in Louisiana, but nationwide, climbing up those ranks. What is your, if you talk about your personality or style as a coach and the way that you kind of teach some of these guys, but also the way that you handle yourself composure-wise when things are tight in some games, because as soon as I think back to some of y'all's years with Danny and I think of him wilding out over some block charge type calls and him still learning what the best way to kind of react to and how some teams are going to react to him, how would you share what just your personality or energy or vibe is?
Yeah, I would say I've gotten calmer as I've gotten older as a player. And so I hope to continue that as a coach because, you know, if my players look over at me and I'm freaking out or rattled or anything like that, I feel like they'll carry that attitude onto the court. So I always want to stay calm no matter the situation in the game. But at the same time, coaching them hard, especially right now in the summer, because this is where those habits are formed that will carry on. The stuff that we're practicing now, all the little things that we do are going to show up in a road district game in late February or a road playoff game in early March. So just stressing that to my guys and really just coaching them hard right now so that when it comes time, and like I said, in late February and March, we can our habits are just too good, and they're just everything they practice is just too good for our opponent.
You mentioned some of this with regards to just kind of ways you may react at certain points and calling out 12 or 5. But what do you think, whether it be fans and family members of the Menard community or teams that you guys are going to be facing this year and for years to come, what should the expectation be of kind of a style of play and an identity from your squads while you're there?
Yeah, style of play is solely dependent on personnel. So it can change year to year based on the strengths and weaknesses of my players. I never want to force my players into a certain role. So I need to adjust as a coach based on their strengths and weaknesses. But there are a couple of things that are non-negotiables that successful teams do. That's, you know, taking care of the ball, taking good shots, playing good defense, blocking out, rebounding, making free throws. All those little fundamentals that all great teams do. So, but as far as, you know, are we going to be a pressing team? Are we going to be a trapping team? Are we going to be a slow it down type of team? That is solely dependent on personnel, and that will change year to year and sometimes game to game.
That is a wise and mature coaching answer for a young coach, man. The excitement to be back in Louisiana, I guess, tell me some of the things that you missed most about the years, whether as a player or as a young assistant, that you've been excited to get back to in your home state, on top of obviously being close to your family, but just different aspects of Louisiana, maybe a couple restaurants or whatever it may be.
Yeah, definitely the food is a plus for sure. I gotta watch that now that I'm not playing anymore too. So definitely the food is a definite plus. But just the culture, the people. Not to say that the people in El Paso or the Bay Area weren't great people. It's just it's home. It's home, and a lot of people that may not necessarily be from here. It's a weird thing to describe, but when you're from here, it's a special place. So just coming back home to that was definitely a pull for me. And as powerful as that pull was, it was a hard decision because, like I said, Coach Bennett, out in California had a huge, huge impact on me the last 2 years, and we had a great relationship. So it was definitely a hard decision.
No doubt about it, man. Louisiana will always be home. And we are happy to have you back home. I don't know if some opposing coaches are going to necessarily feel that way on a couple Tuesday and Friday nights at some point, but right now in the off season, I think everybody's thrilled, man. Congratulations on the new opportunity, and thanks for chatting about it.
Appreciate it. You guys, take it easy.
You too, man. Guys, Trey Tuchet, two-time Louisiana Basketball Player of the Year, Gatorade Basketball Player of the Year at St. Thomas More, learned some under our guy Danny Broussard at that
point. I'm surprised Danny didn't try and get him on for yesterday's show.
Yeah, so I don't know if he thought I had already gotten him, because I texted Danny about trying to connect with Trey for this the last time I was out, but they were in the middle of a workout session or something, like the exact window of the show, 4 to 6 that day, that he had one of his first workouts with his new guys, and I told him we'd figure it out and we'd for sure get him on my Louisiana vs. All Y'all YouTube at some point, and as soon as we got a chance to connect on a day that I was out here, let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And so glad we did. That was kind of when Andrew Lopez or his non-related Landry Topez,
Nopez?
Yeah, were first getting into some of the high school sports, high school basketball coverage, especially at a statewide level, and getting a chance to know Danny was Trey being a fantastic player there for the Cougars. And actually, we did fan voting awards at the end of all of those seasons. At that point, Danny just texted, "Yeah, you stole him." there were fan voting
sniped him.
Fan voting awards at the end of every sports season, and so we had the basketball fan voting, and then I think it was Amos Morrell hosted and had me be his kind of color guy or whatever, just kind of add a little flavor and react to who some of the winners were. And Trey,
you're kind of the sideline analyst of that?
Trey swept the heck out of those awards. I don't know if there may have been like a big man award that Trey somehow got right in votes and won. And then
Danny Broussard wrote those in.
And then Danny was the coach of the year, and Amos asks me about Danny's job coaching the Cougars that year. And I said, well, he's Trey Tuchet's coach, so I guess, I mean, that's all you really need, just kind of jokingly. And then I got an email a couple days later from Danny that was, it made sure to let me know of his track record and his accolades, but also was very classic Danny fun. He wasn't aggravated at all from what I can tell. Maybe he hated me at that point, but it was very funny, just kind of playing along with the joke. And here we are, whatever, I mean, almost a decade later, and I'm calling him Uncle Danny.
Exactly. Uncle Danny, man, he's awesome. Yesterday was just some fantastic stuff for 2 hours yesterday. I know he's out there just absolutely loving hearing one of his boys out here. Because yesterday he had Jack Besh on, almost out of the blue.
Nice.
And that was some good stuff. I mean, he had Bailey Hemphill. The last 2 days have been some solid shows with a lot of STM flavor, Jarrett.
So now I feel less bad about taking Trey, because I texted Bailey earlier to ask what she was up to, and she's probably like, why do they want me to come on the radio every day? so I guess we each got one former. Well, he got two, but
yeah,
we got some
well,
Cougar legends.
Recency bias there.
Yeah,
with Mo Jack.
Make sure to stick with us. We've got one more segment. Clint and I are going to wrap it up and send everyone off to a fantastic weekend. We're here on 103.7 The Game. Just a few more minutes of Bumper to Bumper Sports.
All
your favorite guests come on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Missed an interview?
No!
Don't worry. Acadiana's sports station has got you covered.
Woo-hoo!
Just head on over to 1037thegame.com and check out our on-demand section. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back with a few more minutes of Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Jarrett Roser here with Clint Domingue. Appreciate you guys and gals for sticking with us for 2.5 hours. As I mentioned, just a few more minutes, but make sure you stick with coverage tonight. Houston Astros beginning a 3-game series against the Minnesota Twins, and you can listen to all of that action on our sister station, News Talk 98.5 FM and 1520 AM. The first pitch is set for 7:10 p.m. That's Astros at Twins tonight on our sister station, News Talk 98.5 FM and 1520 AM. And then obviously the big LSU versus Tennessee Super Regional starting tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Tune in for all that coverage. Clint, we were just talking about it, man. It's been a good show. I feel like we sent folks off to the weekend in a positive way. Sunshiny day out in the Acadiana area, and we had some good guests.
We had a lot of Louisiana flavor throughout it, but then again, that's what you expect from a guy who has a YouTube channel called Louisiana versus All Y'all, right?
I'm just trying to rep. I've only lived in state. I've had some opportunities to travel around a little bit, had some offers to go elsewhere, but just like Trey was saying, Louisiana's home, and it just there's something about being here that I know, as much as I enjoy traveling and Ray jokes and calls me Mr. Worldwide and all that stuff, I like to hit the road. But if I was away and didn't have that food we talked about with Trey, or just kind of that general, there's a music in the energy and vibe here, especially in Lafayette and New Orleans, that you're not going to get everywhere you go.
Oh, I know exactly. Like I've thought about it, and it's just like, it's tough to leave, man. Like, it feels to a certain extent Lafayette is a lot like Hotel California. You can check it anytime you like, but you can never really leave. And I think a lot of people maybe in the Scott era could probably agree with that statement a little bit more so. No offense to Scott, but it just feels like once you get here, you never really leave.
Yeah, I love it. It's certainly been good to me through my less young than I feel sometimes life thus far. And so I appreciate certainly the folks and just the Louisiana energy that comes with them.
Oh, no, yeah, it was great to get him Landry Topes. I'd remember how to say because like his connection was a little iffy coming out of the break.
Yeah,
but, you
man,
know.
My headphones went out, and I heard him saying something about Les and Johnny Jones losing their jobs.
Talking about him, the curse of Lopes and how much, like, the second he started covering the LSU beat, everything went to you-know-what, like, in a real quick fashion.
I didn't make this connection, but we're cruising on this show.
He's going to be texting.
And then the headphones go out as soon as he calls in. So he tried to curse of Lopes the show this afternoon.
In the last segment before we get off the simulcast of that was even more. I was like, when I saw you starting moving, I'm like, okay.
Something's going on.
Yeah, I gotta try and figure out how to do all this while also making sure we are still on the air talking.
Yeah.
Thank God, you know, Landry Topes was able to handle things from his perspective in terms of keeping the conversation going while we were trying to figure this out.
Well, the curse of Lopes list is so long that it bought us some time for you to come save the day.
Yes.
Because he was just still one bullet point after another. And we went through a full reset.
The oral history of the curse of Lopes.
And he was
so far.
He was still going. I got audio back and the list continued. And now you can add the headphones to that list as well.
The curse of Lopes. It's all too real. We stumbled upon a major conspiracy theory as well today. So that was a good thing.
What are you up to this weekend, man? Danny is sending me pictures from his lovely backyard pool.
The media pool party?
The media pool.
When is that going to be starting?
Man, I wish I didn't have to go finish a feature tonight and get ready for an LSU 7-on-7 tournament tomorrow morning, because I'd love to go take a dip right now, but hopefully.
Oh, I mean, that's any time, especially once you flip over to the month of June, it's like, all right, need to hit the pool at least once, right?
Yeah, my car was telling me it was 101 degrees when I was starting to head this way.
Jesus. Well, I mean, that is probably outside for a good bit of the day too, so let's not forget about that.
Yeah. But yeah, what's so I'll have that 7-on-7 tournament tomorrow. I've got a feature on Omarion Miller, who picked up an LSU offer this past week that I think is going to be a really good feature for folks to read if they want to check that out at Tiger Details. And just kind of keeping up with all the sports action through the weekend with this huge super series. I know you've got the show tomorrow
under
morning.
The dome, 9 to 11. We got a couple guests lined up. Josh Parrott. We're going to talk some Cajuns basketball. I know it's the summertime and it's June. Maybe not the biggest, best time for college basketball talk, but the Cajuns landed another big transfer.
Yep.
Duguay, Cedric Russell sticking around. What are the expectations going to be for this program heading to 21-22? And then we also got to get into the conversation about the college football playoff expanding, when it could happen, all that stuff. Our guy Steve Lassen, Athlon Sports, will be joining the program at 10:30. But outside of that, man, it's going to be pretty low-key kind of weekend. Definitely going to enjoy maybe the last weekend until, like, September that will have, like, live sports involving teams from in-state.
Yeah.
Like, I think LSU does get there. It's going to be that best of three series. I think it's going to have to get to three because LSU is not going to be, if they lose tomorrow, they're not going down quietly, and I'm almost certain they'll win there. But I think the fact you have Mikhail Hilliard and you have Landon Marceau game one and game two, that gives them an edge like right out the gate going with your two aces from Jump Street. But AJ Labus, if you get to that game three, that's going to be a fun one, especially after what we saw in that Sunday must-win game against Gonzaga.
Yeah, you just need the pitching to set up well throughout the
weekend. You ain't lying.
I think you need those guys that you mentioned to have some success, you know, maybe another name to be able to come in and eat some key innings and keep the team within good position, whether holding on to a lead or staying within striking distance and just not burn through too much too early, because that becomes kind of the name of the game at the end of these series at the college level, particularly in the regional, but to some degree on these series as well.
I just need the LSU game to be an early one. That's all I want, please. Just baseball gods, let that thing be a, like, 2 p.m. first pitch. That way I can enjoy some LSU baseball and have my TV completely free to watch NXT TakeOver on Sunday night.
So the good news is it looks like Sunday will be either 11 or 2.
I couldn't remember if it was like, I know Monday, the If Necessary, is like 3 or 6.
Right.
So I couldn't remember what the other alternative was. So, okay, then it works even better for me. So either way.
Wish we could go ahead and figure that out so we could plan around it a little bit. But
hell,
here we are.
But that's a four-letter network for you.
Yep.
Classic. I mean, they put us on the 3 on Sunday in the finale. Like, what the hell is going on?
Thanks again to our guests, Blake Dean, Reggie Chapman, Fitzgerald West Jr., Tyler Batiste, Landru Topes, apparently, Trey Touchette, Danny Broussard tuning in and sending some questions his former players' way. And thanks, as always, to Clint Domingue for making it all work, saving the day when the headphones went out. I'm Jarrett Rose.
Thanks, Andrew.
Wishing you all a great weekend from 103.7 The Game and Bumper to Bumper Sports. See y'all later.